Colorado.
My name's Cole Ross.
And I'm Jala Prendez.
And you're listening to a bonus level about the Steins Gate series. Jala, you're all caught up.
I am all caught up. I said during the end of the Danganronpa episode that I was, you know, going to play this game because you were like calling me out about it because I had it in my backlog and you're like, you need to play that game. And I was like, okay.
Had you started playing it then? Or
No, okay. I hadn't. I had gotcha. Not played it. It was like in the short list of stuff to play next, but I hadn't gotten around to it. And I only just started it like a couple of months after that because I still had other stuff to play.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I am very glad that I did because Steins Gate Zero ends up ranking as my absolute favorite visual novel.
It's pretty good.
It's over Hakuoki and Leviathan, The Last Day of the Decade, which are wow. have been my top two. And so that is saying something because mm-hmm. I have been, how long have I been talking about those games?
Oh, I mean, for so, you know, quite a bit, you know, and you've yeah. given those really, really high praise. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Well, there's various reasons why I think that Steins Gate Zero is my favorite one. Pretty much it's very well paced. It's got a very intricate story. The characters are all very relatable and they have a lot of layers to their personalities. It's easy to become invested in the goings on. The alternate paths and the bad endings that you get directly tie into how you get to that true ending. So every path is necessary rather than just being, oops, you did it wrong. Go back and pick the other thing that you didn't pick the last time.
Right.
You know, like it's not that. So, everybody knows how much I hate backtracking. So, you know, like it branches off and it branches off at a point like the way that the mechanics work are such that you can figure out when you need to save it. So you can just, you know, load that save and then, you know, progress the story without having to go through all the stuff that you did previously. So, for people who do not know anything about Steins Gate, I think that the first thing we should do is tell them a little bit about the story. Do you want to tell them that?
Yeah, I can hit this, especially because the original Steins Gate does not do a very good job of encouraging you to play it in the first part of it, specifically because certain parts of it are very, very overstated. Specifically, the main character, Okabe, or sorry, Hoen Kyoma.
The mad
scientist. So this is, you know, it's a straight up visual novel. So this is not like Danganronpa, which is, you know, what we talked about last time. This is not like a Phoenix Wright game where it is, you know, kind of a graphic adventure kind of game with a lot of text associated with it. You know, this is, you know, when you sit down to play it, it is like reading an electronic manga or, you know, an anime with extremely limited animation. It's the story about these, you know, this group of like late teens, early 20s, you know, nerds, basically like nerds and otaku who live in Akihabara in 2010, who kind of by accident develop a very specific form of time travel. And they get caught up in this plot with these broader, more secretive organizations and also basically fighting against fate itself as these different world lines, which is how this, you know, this fiction handles causality, as these different world lines, you know, forcibly converge at these, you know, different, you know, these different tragedies. The genre of this is really hard to pin down because it is very funny. A lot of it is played for laughs. You know, a lot of it definitely is leaning into, you know, a certain, you know, a lot of like anime tropes specifically because it is about these, you know, fans, you know, late teens, you know, fans of this, you know, of this, you know, fiction and culture, this media. But also, you know, this dips into some of the most effective horror that I've seen. Yes. Specifically, like, just real anxiety-inducing stuff about time travel as they try to avert these catastrophes and don't. You know, this is probably one of my favorite stories of time travel, specifically because of the way that it works and specifically because the toll on our main character is shown so strongly.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So in the original Steins Gate, the science behind how all of the time travel stuff works is really glacially paced. It's the first part of the game, and it's so hard to get past that initial part. But once you get past that initial section, I think it's like the first four chapters or so of the game, of the original game.
Yeah.
Then suddenly the pace picks up and it's like breakneck from then till the end of the thing. And every single time you get to an ending, you're like, oh my God, and it's just affecting, very dramatic. And not only that, but very rapidly after that first slow part of the game where you're getting acquainted with the world, how the mechanics of everything works. And then also the characters, they start developing a lot more multidimensional aspects, where originally Okabe and Daru and all the other characters are pretty flat. They start, once the heat is on and once the pressure starts building and all of these weird circumstances that they have never encountered before start happening, where they're being hunted by mercenaries who are trying to get a hold of their little time machine thing and all of this other stuff. Once the stakes start ramping up, those characters are put to all different kinds of tests. And, you know, under that strain, they develop a lot more personality and become a lot more likable as characters. So, like, I spent in the original game the first four chapters going, how do you like this, Cole? And just not understanding. Yeah. And I'm like, I can't stand the main guy. I can't stand his childhood friend. I can't stand his other friend, the big nerd guy. I can't stand anybody. Why is this a thing? But as it went on, like, I really started to like all of them.
Yeah.
And then by Steins Gate Zero, they all have so much more character development and so much growth. They go through so many changes. As the story progresses, that by Zero, the main character goes from being, you know, this silly flip-bit guy who's like, you know, talking into a dead cell phone, making up stuff, to having legit PTSD from all of his attempts to fix the stuff that got screwed up and the, you know, people dying and things like that. And just becomes really relatable, even though I would not necessarily make the same calls that he does. Like, I'm on board for seeing what happens, and I really get invested in all of the characters and the scenarios.
What they do with, you know, Okabe Rintaro, you know, starting out just being like, oh God, fuck this guy and his, you know, so like in the English dub, you know, they call like, oh, you're delusional. But like the actual, you know, like the word that they use is chunibyo. Like, I guess that's like what, like eighth grade syndrome or something like that.
Yes.
Like, yeah. You know, it's the idea that like, oh, you're just like this, you're this teenager who is like acting way over the top. Like, you're acting like you have seen people act in movies and anime and stuff. And like, the course of the first Steins Gate is like, oh my God, fuck this guy, to like, oh, I kind of see why he's doing that. To when you learn the reason why he's doing it, it's fucking heartbreaking. Steins Gate Zero starts out, he is a different character. He has shed this alter ego. And the trick that they pull is making the return of the Kyoma, like when he lapses back into that, one of the most triumphant moments. So like, they tricked me into like cheering when this version of a character that I disliked reappeared.
Indeed. And the best part about it is that when they do that in Steins Gate Zero, even he is like, oh God, this, and he's even doing that. But then, like, you know, it's like, it's kind of his security blanket, and it's kind of like how he manages to, you know, get past some very difficult things is basically by having this alter ego.
Yeah.
And, you know, so yeah, it's quite an interesting, turnabout that goes on there. So another interesting thing to note is that Steins Gate and Steins Gate Zero have a weird relationship in a second way. The original game has a true ending to it that is not the ending that Steins Gate Zero continues off from.
Yeah.
Steins Gate Zero continues off from a bad ending from the first game, electing that is canon. And instead of, because basically what it boils down to is that the main character has to more or less make a choice between sacrificing the girl that he's fallen in love with or his childhood friend, as, you know, one or the other inevitably dies in the different world line convergences. And so in the original game, he somehow manages to get both of them to survive, but he does not know the girl that he loved anymore.
Right.
And so that's how that one ended. However, in Steins Gate Zero, the girl that he loved, Kurisu, ends up dying. And that's where this game picks up, is with Okabe basically failing after 50 million tries of saving her, fails again and is just broken by it and just can't handle doing any more of this attempts at fixing the time issues.
Right.
So
he goes so far as to like destroy all of the time machine stuff and like stop everybody from working on it again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's where it begins, and then it follows, the rest of the game follows the consequences of his giving up and how that affects everything else in the world. Because another twist that we haven't mentioned yet, there are larger secret organizations that are out currently studying time travel. Mm-hmm. And one of those organizations, CERN, is the main villain in the original game and sends out the mercenaries to go hunt down the time travel device that, you know, Okabe and his friends made. And there's other organizations that are also doing time travel research. And there's basically an arms race for a time machine that basically will culminate sooner or later into World War III.
Yeah.
And so what Okabe does in, you know, giving up and everything kind of, you know, will, and what he does throughout the course of Steins Gate Zero will hasten the coming of World War III or, mm-hmm. you know, otherwise affect things in such a way that it makes it even worse if there is such a thing.
Yeah, he needs to see how it will affect, like, how soon it will come and how it affects the people that he cares about, you know, and, like, basically as part of what eventually leads to the good ending of Steins Gate, you know, the original Steins Gate Prime, I don't know, as part of the Deus Ex Machina that happens. So, like, all of, it's funny because all of Steins Gate Zero takes place during the ending of Steins Gate 1. Like, you mm-hmm. play, there's this Deus Ex Machina, and Zero is like, okay, he had to go through all this shit to figure out how to make the good ending happen and to, like, set things up so all of the machinations could work this way.
Mm-hmm. So, one of the things that I remember very strongly about the original game that it's kind of touched on in Zero, but not in quite the same way, is that Okabe, when he keeps on going back in time to try over and over again to save both his childhood friend and his love, ends up getting to the so worn down that he stops seeing all of the people around him as people because they are just, you know, like figments of this thing. And he just starts having all these horrible thoughts that he would never have normally, mm-hmm. like, you know, just thinking about all these different things he can do and just seeing them as objects, not as, yeah. as human beings anymore, because they've been repeating everything and he's just seen them doing stuff over and over this whole time. So that was a really dramatic and very evocative aspect of the original game. I think probably the most evocative aspect for me personally in the first game.
Yeah. Stopping and see. So you're talking about, it's one of the first alternate endings that you can get. It's the Suzuha ending.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
you know, and all the endings are kind of associated with a particular character. We can talk about who Sousa is later. But when he decides, okay, I can't save Mayuri, who's the childhood friend, he decides, okay, I've got these 2 days that I can spend, because he can only go back 2 days. I'm going to live them over and over and over again. And the repetition of that, you know, the dark ground, basically the darkest version of Groundhog Day, kind of lulls him into the sense of psychopathy. When I played this, you know, originally, and like when I got to that, I was like, oh yeah, this is the thing that sells me. Like this convinced me that, like, oh yeah, this is worth seeing through to the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And that, basically in that particular storyline where he is there with Suzuha, there is a point where he's just looking at her, and out of nowhere, he's just kind of like, you know, she's really attractive. I could just have my way with her right here and everything would be undone because time travel.
Yeah.
And, you know, he, like, it's a dark thought that he has, and he backs away from it right away. But, like, mm-hmm. the fact that he even thinks that, he's like, oh, crap. Uh-oh. You know, like, yeah. Oh, this is bad. This is really bad, because mm-hmm. I am not even thinking about her like a human being anymore. And he doesn't do anything like that. And actually, that ending ends up being a sort of romance between him and Suzuha. But, you know, like, it's just a very, it surprised me that they went there.
Right.
Actually. And I think that's what made me go, oh, this is for real. This isn't just like this Chunibyo stuff that, like, that was at the beginning of this game, you know, like there's a solid core to this game that's not just going to be in the safe zone of these tropes, you know?
Yeah. It's substantially darker than anything that came before, and kind of substantially darker than anything that came afterward, with the exception of some stuff that happens in Zero. Like around, you know, the world ending, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So to continue the storyline, though, of Zero. So in the storyline, to recap, his love, Kurisu, has died, and he has given up trying to save her and has PTSD. He has given up his alternate ego, and he is just being a serious university student.
A normie.
Yes, very much a normie, as Daru likes to remind him. Daru being his hacker friend, who is very much like the character that I probably liked the least in the original game, because he's just really gross. He's like, he's always playing hentai pornographic games and just making gross comments to people.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of cuts it out a little bit in the Zero version. Like, he doesn't seem or maybe it's just because he has other personality traits that are also emphasized that I just don't pay attention to it as much, because basically it seemed like the only thing he did in the first game 90% of the time was make gross comments.
Yeah, Daru didn't develop in the first game. Zero, you know, certain things come to light, and he, you know, there are external factors that force him to grow up and stop being such a creep, let's say.
Yeah. Well, it surprised me, because by the end of Zero, I actually liked him, yep. which I was like, huh, I did not expect to like this character ever. Well, all right. Yeah. Well, okay, game. I mean, like, it's kind of like when it tricked you, Cole, into
into welcoming Kyoma back.
And I'm just like, yeah, like, what the hell, game? How did you do this? Well, anyway, so he's being, okay, Okabe, the main character, is being a regular ass university student. And then he goes to a talk by Dr. Leskinen and his research assistant, Maho Hyajo, from Victor Kondria University, which is where Kurisu, his lover, or love, unrequited love, or whatever, died, worked.
Mm-hmm.
And the research project is an AI that is basically a replication of a person's memories as uploaded whenever. And they actually happen to have Kurisu's memories uploaded from before she came to Japan and all the stuff hit the fan, like before mm-hmm. she met Okabe and before all the time machine stuff happened.
Yeah.
And so basically Okabe ends up meeting the pair of scientists and then becoming a researcher slash, you know, like tester basically for the Amadeus system, Amadeus being the AI.
Yeah.
So
I want to talk about Leskinen just a little bit. And I mean, there's more stuff substantially about him and about Judy Reyes, who ends up being kind of a partner in crime with him a little bit later on. But like his ultra goofy personality, and specifically the way they decide to do the voice acting and stuff for him, is really funny to me.
It is hilarious. It is hilarious. Did you play this with Japanese audio, or were you able to switch it to the English?
Okay. I believe that in the actual visual novels, they didn't localize the audio.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I only ever got to hear the Japanese guy
speaking English badly. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. It's very great. Funny. And what's funny, like, so, you know, Kurisu, you know, the unrequited love who helps build the time machine, and Maho, kind of the new character who is, you know, who has this kind of like rivalry with Kurisu. Basically, anybody who comes from Japan, I want to put this to you and, you know, also the audience, anybody who comes to Japan from America constantly like says, I'm going to sue you for that. Like talking about sexual harassment and stuff like that. So my, what I need to understand is that a common stereotype of Americans to everybody outside of America?
Well, I don't know about everybody outside of America, but I know from talking to my friends in Japan back, especially when I was doing a lot of language exchange stuff, that definitely people, there's two things that basically everybody thinks, or everybody seemed to think from the people I spoke to about Americans. One, they all have tattoos, and two, they like to sue people.
Gotcha. Very litigious.
So, so those are two very main things that are, you know, pretty common thoughts. Through lines there.
Okay, cool. I just like I noticed it as a commonality. So I should probably say, Jolly, you recently played Steins Gate Zero. To prepare for this, I went back and I watched the animes of the anime adaptations of Steins Gate 1 and Zero. And like I noticed like that is kind of like a go-to joke for them, and I was unclear where that came from. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, it's very specifically Maho that makes that joke over and over again when talking about Dr. Leskinen, because Dr. Leskinen will get like super friendly and she's like, back off, I'll sue for sexual harassment, you know, because that's the thing. And she's actually like a Japanese person over in America. So she's not even technically an American person, but it's just because she spent time in America. I think, I think Okabe or somebody, I might be misremembering, but I think somebody actually comments on it that, oh, she must have spent some time in America because she's wanting to sue everybody.
It's such a minor thing, but I noticed that, and I have no insight into basically other country stereotypes about us here in America. Besides, you know,
at this point I would be terrified to know any of them anymore.
I mean, and a lot of them, we probably deserve it, but like you know, Okabe ends up in this really like it's a bad spot. He's been going to therapy and stuff, trying to forget the events of the summer of 2010, and then he, over the course of going to school, basically ends up having all of that reopened. Like, okay, I've been trying to forget this woman. Well, here is her personality and memories attached to a program that I am like kind of forced to talk to.
And not only that, well, he elects to do it. They say, well, you don't have to, but he is so in love with her that he can't help himself. He's like, it's bad. I know it's going to be bad for me, but at the same time, I cannot, he cannot. It's a train wreck that he sees coming, and he's just on the tracks, you know, he's going to run into it. And, the thing about it that's really poignant is the fact that there are so many points where he finds himself falling in love with her all over again, then going, wait a minute, this is an AI, this isn't a person. And then sometimes questioning himself, what is a person? Is this actually Kurisu? You know, like all this other stuff that he starts, you know, questioning, like, what is a person in the first place? And, you know, like, is this weird? Is this normal? Like, and then also just not knowing what to do about any of it, and just kind of broaching like a whole different, you know, thought process there.
I was worried that they were going to jump the tracks into a different kind of pseudoscience when they started playing with AI and identity, you know, like, you know, and by jump the tracks, I mean, like, you know, we already have Zero Escape, and Zero Escape really plays in that space quite a bit. And it's substantially different than this. I'm happy with the way that it ultimately turned out, that they didn't, you know, that they didn't too much dwell on like the nature of Amadeus, and more it was kind of just focused on the function of her in the story. Because
go ahead, finish your thought.
No, like the important thing, what ends up, you know, happening besides, you know, her kind of keeping, you know, Okabe in his funk a little bit, but the important thing is that because Kurisu ended up, you know, writing the theory that became the underpinning for all of the, you know, the time travel and, you know, World War III, the fact that her memory still exists makes her existence incredibly dangerous, because all of that can just be dug up again as long as all of that is still there.
Well, it's not only her memory in Amadeus, but it's also the fact that Maho, her rival slash, you know, sister friend, both has the AI, but also has Kurisu's laptop from before everything happened. And it's locked, and she's trying to find a hacker to open up that data so she can get to it, because it's apparently impossible for anybody to open. But there's the fact that that laptop exists also means that her research is still in there, and whoever can access that laptop has the capacity to, you know, also rebuild everything. And so there's characters from Russia and other organizations that are all trying to get that data and get Amadeus and control of Amadeus as well. So there's multiple things.
And your choices about whether, you know, when and how you talk to Kurisu Amadeus, that is what impacts the branching points. Although this game branches more substantially, so it branches earlier than the original Steins Gate does, and the individual you know, kind of divergences, like the, you know, the chapters, they're much longer than what you found. Like in the original Steins Gate, they were like alternate endings more than anything else.
Yes, and I will just put a pin in the AI talk, because I do want to talk about how it relates to Kagari, but insofar as gameplay is concerned, I was so glad that they changed the phone trigger system from the first game to the second game. So the way that you affect things in the original game is via a phone trigger system where you are basically interacting with Okabe's phone. You take calls or don't take calls. You respond to text messages in certain ways. And that's how you affect things. The problem with that is because it is basically like alternate endings, that means you have to go through most of the story with this phone, jacking with it and doing certain things. And when you're skipping through all that text with the auto skip, it will skip over the stuff with the phone if you're not careful. And so, like, boy, that was a frustration for me. And so in Steins Gate Zero, they ameliorated that issue by, number one, making it to where the only things affecting it are whether or not you take calls from Amadeus slash Kurisu AI. And like also the quick skip, I think it stops at the point whenever you get a phone call. So it stops and goes to like a slow down regular mode the moment you get to a decision point. So it allows you, and also you can also save right when the phone is ringing, so you can don't have to go back to that point and skip again. So all of that makes it so much smoother on the second game to go through and play. But again, like those breaking points, those decision points happen so much earlier in the second game that it really makes for a lot smoother of a gaming experience when you're going through. So it's not so much of the same ground being tread over again.
Yeah. And like the true ending that you get here just relies on you hitting a certain, you know, a couple of certain other endings first. in the first game, in the previous work, like the true ending was hidden behind. So like you had to read a guide. I don't know how somebody would make those decisions and respond in the correct way to like prompt the extra scenes that you need to make the right thing happen.
Yeah. And so because of the opacity of the first game, like the game playing experience is actually as weird as it sounds for a visual novel, which is gameplay light. it's far less intensive and less, difficult to get through on zero than it is on the first game. So what they did to streamline it works so well. Now, looping back about AI and this character named Kagari. So one of the characters that's introduced in Steins Gate Zero is a character named Kagari, who is a little girl who was orphaned during World War III, who is adopted by Mayuri in the future and ends up coming to the past with Suzuha in order to basically save her life. Mayuri like pushes her in after Suzuha to like try to keep her from living in such a miserable, terrible environment.
Yeah.
And Kagari gets lost when she's about 10 years old, somewhere in what I think it's 2007 or something.
No, it was 2000. So she got lost in 2000 when Suzuha stopped there and wrote messages as John Titor in the beta world line, I think. And she lost her in 2000 and then jumped to 2010 to look for her dad.
Okay, yeah, I knew that she was lost some amount of time beforehand, but I had no idea where. So anyway, Kagari is lost. Suzuha has been searching for her this entire time, and one of her different missions in Steins Gate Zero is to look for her. I'll talk about who Suzuha is in just a minute, but basically this character of Kagari... you find out throughout the course of all of the different endings that she was kidnapped and experimented on, and memories of Kurisu have been implanted inside of her head. So one of the endings involves Kagari basically losing all of her memories of herself and being taken over by the memories of Kurisu and pretty much just being like Kurisu part two.
That is so fucked up. I forgot about that.
That's one of the endings. Another ending with Kagari is where she remembers all of her past and what happened to her in World War III and everything. And then she's struggling against herself because she's got brainwashing and mind control that is making her turn into a killer. And she's reluctant to do that. And then there's another ending where she is hateful towards everybody who took her mother away from her, and it turns into a willing killer, killing everybody in sight. So like she is such a malleable character that just changes drastically from one to another ending that I don't really have any feelings about her other than as a function. She feels more like a function than she feels like a character to me.
Yeah.
But that's just because she can go any which way. Now, did you want to explain who Suzuha is, since I mentioned her a few times and didn't say a damn word about who she is?
Yeah. And Suzuha ends up being one of my favorite characters in this. She's introduced in the first game as a part-time employee at the, antique television shop beneath the office that all these people rent. Sorry, the lab that Okabe and Daru rent. But she actually is somebody who has come back from 2036 in order to make sure, to find a way that to avert World War III. And so, it's kind of like Terminator or something like that. You know, she grew up in this world that was, constantly under threat, and she is just a very capable warrior. And so the course of revealing who she actually is and where she comes from in the first game, it definitely does catch you off guard because it doesn't really match up. With the exception that she doesn't quite know how to react to certain things that she sees, kind of in present day. She also is the person who acts as, you know, exposition, kind of explaining the, you know, all of these theories about time travel that came out in the future, basically like taking research and conclusions that Okabe and Daru came to in the future and bringing them back so that they can help working on this stuff and making sure it happens, thus creating kind of a time loop or a stable time loop kind of thing. But like her trying to find her way in this really different world than what she grew up in, and ultimately being the person who is most capable when the shit goes down, kind of makes her really interesting, you know, as a character. She feels a little bit like she's been imported from a different game, but the, like, it's not, or a different story, but like, it's not obnoxious in any kind of way. She is ultimately vulnerable specifically because, you know, she has so much resting on her. She is basically trapped here because her time machine breaks in the main timeline that you follow in. And she is looking for her father, who she, you know, has kind of a, all that she knows is that he was around here in, you know, in 2010. So all of this kind of comes out. But yeah, I like her story and her demeanor, quite a bit out of all these characters.
Oh, Suzuka is probably one of my absolute favorite characters for sure. Mm-hmm. I loved her in the first game, where her personality is markedly different than in the second game in Zero. So in the original game, she's kind of very upbeat and friendly and, you know, like, as you say, very capable. But it's very funny because sometimes the way she describes things is off because mm-hmm. she doesn't know what this thing is that was never around in World War III or post-World War III, mm-hmm. you know, desolation or whatever. And she also comes off as being very lonely because, you know, like, nobody understands. I mean, how can they, you know? And that kind of sentiment continues into Steins Gate Zero, where Okabe has kind of like a shock when he sees Suzuha, and he's used to her being the happy-go-lucky Suzuha that he remembers from this other world line. And she is very serious. Mm-hmm. She's very mission-focused, and she's just like, you know, out looking for Kagari, who is, you know, the adoptive daughter of Mayuri, and trying to convince Okabe to look for Steins Gate, which is supposed to be like the place of world-like convergence where both Kurisu and Mayuri exist.
Yes.
And so this perfect special place is like incredibly difficult to get to. And basically the only person capable of doing this would be Okabe. And he has to do that in order to prevent World War III from happening.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just given up in Zero as the game starts. And so she is suffering, you know, like fears of failure. Like, how am I going to, like, the time, you know, the time is coming. It's going to be any time now that mm-hmm. World War III is going to happen. And I have to do this. And I don't even know where Kagari went to. And, you know, all this other stuff. So she is very, very distraught and very, very alone and very mission focused to the point that she can't even have simple pleasures. And she's got so many scars on her body that she can't, you know, like, say, for example, just relax with the girls for an mm-hmm. evening, because if she does, then they will see her scars and ask questions. And she can't explain why she's as young as she is with all of these scars from battle.
Yeah.
And, you know, she actually forms quite a touching relationship with Daru, who is her father. You know, in the present day, like, basically the weirdness about that is that Daru is about her age, but is her father because mm-hmm. she's from the future.
Yep.
And so the thing that really forces him to grow up is the fact that he now has his daughter from the future, who's about his age, mm-hmm. but like, he's gotta play dad, and he has no idea what he's doing. And he's like, you know, the little otaku who chills out and plays hentai games all day. And he's just like, I don't even know. And he actually does a pretty good job of, you know, being dad when it counts. And
yeah,
like,
he steps
really
up to the plate.
Yeah, he really does. And so like, it surprised the hell out of me when I ended up liking him, and I'm like, huh. Okay, well, that's a thing. But Suzuha just misses her dad so much that it's really weird for her too, because she wants to just like you know, go and give him a hug and cry on his shoulder. But, you know, this is not her dad, This is right. like her dad as a younger man who's just like, you know, it's very awkward and weird for yeah. her. And, you know, so
there's a little bit of a Back to the Future kind of angle to this as well, where yes. she is trying very hard to make sure that he ends up with her mom, who's kind of introduced in this handful of characters, and you know, who are brought in Steins Gate Zero, who are like Mayuri's friends, you know. And it ends up kind of being a little bit of a filler episode in the anime where they're like trying to convince him, you know, to straighten up and be a little bit more normal and go on a date with her. And ultimately the revelation that like, oh, I don't need you to do this. I like you the way that you are, you know, ends up being, you know, kind of sweet, you know, to a certain degree, like, oh, they're going to end up together anyway. So, they, you know, she probably didn't have a reason to worry. Like, yeah, all of that is just like, it feels like they put in two games worth of character development for Daru just because they didn't really have much in the first.
yeah. So, well, I definitely enjoyed that. Although at the same time, it was like, just leave them alone. Like I was like almost screaming at my Switch, like just leave them alone and just let them be, and they will be fine. Yep. I promise you, you know, like, you know, just cause basically the character that is Suzuha's mother, is actively a cosplayer. She's a cosplayer who's into anime and stuff like that, and yeah. she likes dressing sexy and doing all this other stuff. And so she's like basically a perfect fit for Daru, and it's like, mm-hmm. just, you know, he doesn't have to be anything other than what he is. That's fine, you know.
Yeah. Something that is like completely overlooked in the anime is like the plot line where Suzuha's mom, you know, and Daru's girlfriend Amane, it turns out that she is Kagari, who has been yes. like had like the like I forget all of that because it's been years since I've played Steins Gate Zero. What was the deal with that, where she was Kagari this time?
She, in order to, I think what it was is like, in order to actually make sure that Amane was going to be safe, Kagari ended up undergoing like a you know, some kind of a procedure to like look like her. Yeah. And the original actual Amane is off in Europe.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so it was like basically to make sure that Amane would still be alive. I don't know exactly. Like it's yeah. that was a very weird ending, and it was just like, whoa, that's real left field.
Yeah.
But yeah, she is Kagari in one of the things. But then like in the rest of them, like that's not mentioned at all. So I didn't know what to think about it, because you know, all the rest of them, Kagari is the girl that looks similar to Kurisu,
right.
who ends up being like this plot device character. So yeah. I didn't really know what to think about that.
Like that was mixed in with a little bit of like fast and looseness that they indulged yeah. in with who is the assassin in the motorcycle gear. Like
yes.
whenever that person pops up, and it's, you know, intentionally there to remind you of a beat in Steins Gate 1 where it's where it's Moika, but like one of the things that changes between all of the different endings is like who that actually is. And yes. like Kagari, you know, sometimes it's Kagari, sometimes it's Reyes, sometimes it's Moika. You know, like it feels like, yeah, there's not actually like a causal reason why that would change. It's just like, that is what would result in a different story. So let's just go with it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I know that we were talking about Dr. Leskinen, the guy who is heading the research that created Amadeus, the AI that has Kurisu's memory in it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to talk about him a little bit more. So you want to talk a little bit more about Leskinen and Reyes, since now you've name dropped both of them?
Yeah. Yeah. So they both present. So they're both foreigners, and they both present as incredibly goofy and like parental, like, you know, they're both trying to get, you know, Okabe and Maho together, and both of them, you know, really resent that. And like they're, you know, at the very least, Leskinen ends up being kind of a source of stability, you know, oftentimes for like a couple of these characters to go to, specifically Maho, and a couple of times for Okabe. Reyes is a little bit more over the top than Leskinen, but they're both incredibly goofy is how they present. And you know, people who have not played the games, this is kind of a big deal, but they end up being some of the biggest villains in this. And I'm a little bit unclear. I forget how Judy Reyes articulates in the actual game. I think they combined her a little bit with Leskinen. She has a very diminished role in the anime. You know, where she and, you know, Leskinen is working for Stratfor, which is basically like an Illuminati kind of thing, and she is working for DARPA. And they're yes. both kind of had, you know, they're basically double agents working with and against each other to, you know, to a certain degree. But the reveal mm-hmm. where they are manipulating not just these, you know, these young adults, these students, but also, you know, what Leskinen does by being responsible for what happens to Kagari and using her as basically the world's slowest messenger pigeon to manipulate things is really, really sinister. And it's really gratifying to see bad things happen to them in the world lines that or the endings that end up having them get any comeuppance.
Yeah, and both Leskinen and Reyes work in Victor Kondria University. Leskinen is over the department that basically does all the AI stuff. And mm-hmm. then Reyes is the head of the, like, I think it's parapsychology or something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, like, you know, the more brain science-y, direct brain science-y stuff. And both of them are, because they are both working for these Illuminati type organizations, are basically looking to control Amadeus and the time machine information because they can get so much money. They can do mm-hmm. so much if they have this.
Yeah.
And
science is not always a charity is something that Leskinen says.
Yep. And Leskinen actually presents a little bit less evil, at least from my memory, than Reyes does, because Reyes mm-hmm. is like manipulating Kagari and I think wasn't her team the one responsible for Kagari's brainwashing in the first place or something?
That makes sense. The anime puts most of that on Leskinen. You know, like when when Mooka and Okabe drive to the mountains in the north and go to that compound mm-hmm. where Kagari mm-hmm. was kept, like that was Leskinen who was running that, not Reyes.
Yeah.
I seem to remember one of the endings where Reyes was like, oh yeah, she's outlived her usefulness now. It's fine. Mm. You know, and like, it was just whatever about it.
Yeah.
She, who knows who, like she was manipulating quite a few different people.
Yeah.
And in her ending, she was also manipulating Leskinen. Whereas in Leskinen's ending, basically Reyes is just failing and he knew about her, but wasn't, you know, foiling all of her plans the same way that he ends up, or the way that she ends up doing it in her ending.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, there's just a bunch of double crossing and all these characters that seem to be pretty, you know, solid bros or whatever are not. Mm-hmm. They're not solid bros. They're terrible.
No, no.
So another turnabout that I liked in Steins Gate Zero versus the original is that some of the characters, character Lab Mem Mooka, who we've mentioned briefly, yeah. As well as
Mr. Brown,
you know, Mr. Brown, the guy who owns the building where the lab is, who has his little antique TV shop downstairs.
Yeah.
Both of them are rounders for the CERN organization, which is the main villain of the first game. And mm-hmm. so rounders are basically a mercenary group. And in the first game, both of them end up trying to kill everybody or, yeah. you know, whatever. Like they or do kill. I mean, like, depending upon which one you're talking about, like it's mm-hmm. terrible. Like they're absolutely horrible. You find out.
Yeah.
But in Zero, they end up actually helping out. Like, you know that they're dangerous. Okabe knows that they're dangerous. And you're yeah. kind of on pins and needles, like, oh God, are they going to do a bad? But actually they end up helping because it's in their interest as well to make sure that this or that organization does not get this information or yeah. whatever. And so they end up actually, you know, acting, behaving a little bit more neutrally, because CERN is not the big concern in this one, you know?
Yeah. So. It's really funny because, like, the, you know, a large part of the first game was, you know, undoing all of the things that put, you know, the lab on CERN's radar, you know, to the point where, you know, Mr. Braun, that's not actually his name. His name's like Tendioje, but you know, Okabe calls him Mr. Braun after Ferdinand Braun, the inventor of the cathode ray tube for televisions, because he works in a TV shop. But like when Okabe goes downstairs and says like, hey, yeah, I know you're a mercenary working for this like organization. Don't ask me how I know, but I need your help. Like, you know, you have no reason to come after us, but you know, we've been messing with this stuff. And then Moika, who, you know, just we can talk about the way that her character is expressed here. Like, she never ended up being hired by FB in this one, but she still has all the capabilities and can, you know, basically be hired by anybody to do these terrible things. She just ends up being hired by the lab to act as their kind of foot person, their bag man.
FB is another code name for the Mr. Braun guy, who is, you know, like this rounder, this mercenary. And Moeka, the lab member in the original game, she basically infiltrates the lab and, you know, is aware, like she's there to get information and to get to the time machine apparatus and all of that, and then turns on everyone and, you know, depending upon which ending you're talking about, has killed people or done whatever, is very much a threat, where she seemed pretty flat and uninteresting at the beginning of the game. And so in the second one, because she wasn't hired to be a threat, she's not a threat necessarily, although as you said, Cole, definitely has all the capabilities. And so she ends up becoming, you know, kind of like a good, I wouldn't say a good character, but like at least a force for good anyway.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that she also even has some character development with the other girls, particularly Maho. She has like a bonding moment with Maho because they're both slovenly and like they have this weird camaraderie that builds up during the course of the game, which is very left field to see, but actually rather entertaining.
Yeah. So Moeka, her full name's Moeka Kiryu. Sometimes she's referred to as either of them. She specifically has like kind of an unnamed social disorder, where she is incredibly shy, and really has not made an awful lot of connections, has no family. And that's how the rounders were able to manipulate her, was basically by, you know, finding a way to communicate with her and give her a purpose to, you know, to kind of go after her. But the main way that she interacts with people, you know, she will speak in like one or two word sentences, but she prefers to interact by text message or email. And she rattles these off so quickly that Okabe calls her Shining Finger. She is like that in all of basically in any of her appearances, where she is like far more expressive and far more talky. She just prefers to do it through, you know, through a machine. And so like that is one of the ways that she is able to insinuate herself into the lab in the first game, is by seeming like a bigger weirdo than anybody else who is there. And like, oh, she's harmless. It's fine.
What's really interesting about her as a character is that part of that that makes it even more disconcerting is the fact that when she types her things, she uses all these emotes and all this other stuff, but she's so deadpan looking and she has no inflection to her voice when she's speaking, she speaks. But like when she's typing, she will be super cutesy and express all of these emotions that just do not come across otherwise. And so it's actually pretty funny, because this game overall does a really good job, in my opinion, of showing all different kinds of internet people. I mean, like, these are I'm looking at, like, you know, all these people are internet people. They all have different personas. Like, Kurisu, the unrequited love crush, you know, genius girl who comes up with the whole time machine theory in the first place, is an active at channeler, at channel being, you know, like this whole messaging system. And she just will flame people. That becomes like a thing. That is a way that Okabe actually ends up sending secret messages to Amadeus, because the AI of her, AI of Kurisu and Amadeus, is also a net channeler.
I love that she gets bored. And even the AI, so, like, you know, like she does it on the, you know, she does it on the sly, like, you know, at Chan being a stand in for you know, for 2chan. And, like, everybody, like, just kind of say, like, oh yeah, you totally have this part to yourself, but you're way into that. I just love that she is, like, ashamed to be a part of that culture, but she is so in it.
Yep. Yeah. And she will just sit there and inflame. He intentionally in Zero sends stuff that he knows will set her off just to make her turn into a troll and just to pay attention. And, you know, like, then sends, like, a secret message, like a coded message that only she would understand, using references that only she would understand from their discussions.
So. Yeah. Well, as a way to, you know, get around the people who are observing her, you know. Observing the Amadeus and the information that she's getting. Yeah. I love that the AI gets bored and goes onto the internet.
Yep. So, yeah, there's definitely quite a few interesting character developments, even for things like the AI, that I really appreciate in this game. So,
yeah.
And when I first saw that there was an AI of Kurisu, I didn't think that I would actually give a crap about it at all necessarily, but yeah, like they end up making it to where I even care about the AI. So
yeah,
so the way that Steins Gate Zero culminates is in any number of different endings, but I think the true ending is basically where Mayuri, the childhood friend, overhears Okabe talking about how it's either Mayuri or Kurisu who has to die.
Right.
And she feels terrible because she's aware that, you know, her being alive causes Okabe pain because Kurisu is not alive. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, this one or the other thing is crap. And basically Okabe needs to try to fight and find Steins Gate. Mm-hmm. And she knows that the only person capable of inspiring him to fight for that is herself. And so she ends up jumping into the time machine with Suzuha to go back and try to convince Okabe to keep fighting right when he's about to give up, because otherwise World War III literally starts happening at the end of the game. Like it's literally just a few weeks away from, you know, everything happening at the start of Zero. And so some of the major flashes that happen in the game are where Okabe ends up skipping forward into the future and is in the future dealing with this whole Terminator post-apocalyptic crap with all these dead bodies everywhere and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
Slipping back to talking about the ending, though. So Mayuri and Suzuha jump into the time machine, but at the same time, Leskinen and all of his people and all these other factors, you know, all pop up at the same place. They're all there.
It's like the big fight scene from Anchorman. Like, here's America, here's Russia, here's Leskinen, here's everybody. Like,
yeah,
all converging on the rooftop of the radio building.
Yeah, and it is. And it's literally America and Russia and Leskinen and, like, I don't know, like this, that, and the kitchen sink. Everybody's there. And, you know, right about then, the time machine leaps, but there's some kind of a malfunction. I don't remember. Doesn't it get hit or something? And, like, or there's, like, low fuel or something. There's something wrong with it to where they don't know where the hell Mayuri and Suzuha went to. They disappeared to somewhere.
Yeah. So it's two things. Initially, when it goes to goes to warp away, a helicopter shoots it with a missile and it explodes.
Oh, yeah.
And this starts Okabe to, like, basically rushing the development of the time leap machine, so he can send his consciousness and memories back to before it goes off, so he can try to, before the missile hits, so he can try to change it so they get away. So that is another time loop that is repeated several times, that, you know, can ultimately lead to him going to the future and have to make his way all the way back. Eventually, he breaks convergence and they warp away, but they run out of fuel. And that version of Mayuri and Suzuha, remember, these are not like the prime versions of them. Like the other ones are still back there, you know, approaching Steins Gate. They end up getting lost, you know, somewhere in time. This is left as a cliffhanger in the game, but it's actually shown resolved in the anime.
Oh, okay. Well, because the way that the game ends at that point is that Mayuri and Suzuha disappear. They are somewhere in time, lost somewhere in time. Mm-hmm. And Okabe, through some timey-wimey fuckery, ends up sending a message back to himself, instructing himself how to save Kurisu and cause that divergence to Steins Gate. And then Okabe, in the future, in 2025, jumps into another time machine from that era to go and find Mayuri and Suzuha wherever the hell they went to. And that's like how it ends. That's the ending of the game.
Yeah. Because the ending, like the ending that they needed was to get that message back to the Okabe from the first game. So he could, so he could get that going. Like Steins Gate would not open until 2036 when the older Suzuha would go back and become the Suzuha from the first game. Do you want to know what happens after he gets into the prototype time machine to go look for the beta versions of Mayuri and Suzuha?
Sure, you might as well tell me since I was... Okay, so before you do that, I'll just say that like when the game ended and that's how it ended, and I was just like, what? Like, I wasn't sure if I was mad or if I was okay with it.
You talked about wanting to skip your PS Vita or your Switch across the lake like a stone.
I was thinking about it. I thought about it, but I was mixed. And I wasn't exactly 100% sure if I wanted to throw my Vita or if I was okay. Yeah. And I sat on it for a while without throwing anything. And then I was like, you know, I think actually... that given the fact that there's so many time loops and this is a game about time machines where shit is never finished, it keeps on getting fucked with over and over. Like, there's no other way for it to end except like on a cliffhanger, leaving you with, now you don't know what's going to happen next. Like, because you know, it can get messed with again. Like there isn't really any resolution when you have a time machine. So how can they put an ending? So
yeah.
Anyway, you can tell me like the ending that they gave it though.
So in the game, it feels like a sequel hook.
Yes, it does. It does.
Yeah, and so in the anime, it's like a post-credits kind of scene where the, you know, the time machine appears. It's like 18,000 BC or something like that. You know, they got stranded. You know, basically in this gigantic desert. You know, it's pre-humanity. You know, it's awful. They have not been there for very long. Okabe is able to appear there and say like, hey, I'm sorry I kept you waiting. You know, and he is able to rescue them and bring them back. Bring them back to some timeline where they can all exist.
Okay, well, that just sounds like a cop-out, but okay.
Yeah.
I'll just, okay, whatever. Like, I do not even know how he would begin to even find them, but
They mention, like, tracking, you know, like, basically detecting the Kara Black hole that they use to compress the time machine and seeing where it led to. It is a little bit of a cop-out, but it is a way to provide, you know, I have no idea.
Some kind of closure, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know what their plans are, if they're, you know, if they think that, basically, like, if when they made the visual novel, they didn't know if they were going to make another one. And by the time they made the anime, they realized, no, the main story of this is over, and we're going to be doing kind of these side stories from now on. That's kind of what it feels like to me. But, like, the prime story, which is the... you know, the one from the original Steins Gate, is resolved with the opening of Steins Gate that leaves that you know, leaves everybody alive in World War III averted, and, you know, Okabe and Kurisu, you know, effectively strangers, but still in a position to get to know each other.
Yeah. Well, so I still feel like Steins Gate Zero has the... this sounds weird, especially since I was about to throw my Vita. I think it has a better ending.
Yeah.
I think it has the better ending of the two.
Of course. In the first one, like it's a bunch of Deus Ex Machina. Like, okay, the conditions had to be just such, right. You had to, basically Okabe had to see Kurisu die in order to get like the motivation. And I think that this one does have the better ending because, it actually it shows a little bit more of its work. Like it does more of its math on the screen,
So, well, this series also has, as you mentioned, different spin-off games. Some of these spin-off games actually occurred throughout the process of the making of these two main games, Steins Gate and Steins Gate Zero. And there's also other IP releases throughout. There is a manga, two different series by two different authors. There's the anime, which is two seasons with a movie. There are light novels, different drama CDs, an internet radio show, music CDs, a board game that's based on Rhynet, which is the game that Faris, one of the characters, plays particularly heavily in the first game. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was a live-action play. There is also a live-action Hollywood TV series that was announced this year.
Whoa.
That was announced. So, that's a thing. It was in IGN that they were talking about there's going to be a live action show adaptation of this. In addition to that, there are different spin-off games. There is Steins Gate, My Darling's Embrace, which I played a little bit of. It is basically a fan disc that was released in 2011. That is, it's basically omake or extra content for fans that were made by the game's creators.
Yeah.
It's a non-canon dating sim that takes place during the events of the original Steins Gate, but in a different world line somewhere, because you can very conveniently say that everything takes place in a different world line.
Well, yeah.
because, timey-wimey. But, yeah. Anyway, it's not that interesting. I played a little bit of it, and I'm like, it didn't even get to the dating sim part. I just was playing a story, and it was just a real slow story. And I'm like, okay, well, this is a thing. Okay, whatever. And it has pretty average mixed reviews. There's Steins Gate 8-bit, which Steins Gate Elite, the Switch release, actually has 8-bit Steins Gate in it as an extra thing that is enclosed with it that you can actually just have if you get the Steins Gate Switch release, which I did not know that. So I'm like, well, I already have Steins Gate on my Vita, but I don't know. Maybe I'll have to get that one so I can play the 8-bit.
I don't know how much like new content or new story is introduced in 8-bit. I've been tempted to get the Steins Gate Elite on Switch because like that is a substantial kind of remake where basically wherever they can use footage from the anime, they do. So it is kind of a more, more aggressively animated version of the, of the original visual novel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if I am going to like that or if I'm going to dislike that just because, the anime is an adaptation from the original game. So I don't know how much is going to be very different, but if I end up getting it, it'll probably be if it happens to go on sale, which, Switch, it doesn't go on sale for much, but anyway, maybe one day. But, there's also another one called Steins Gate Linear Bounded Phenogram, which
these fucking names.
I know. Right. I had to read that off of my notes because there's no way I'd ever remember that crap. Okay. So it is supposed to be a more serious spinoff and it's very well received, particularly because there's multiple character viewpoints the way that they do in Steins Gate Zero. It was released in Japan on Switch as part of the collection, get this, Cole, Steins Gate Divergencies of Sort. Okay.
Yeah.
But it's also the HD remaster is available in the US as part of the PC and PS4 release of Steins Gate Elite.
Oh, cool. I'm going to sit at my computer and play a visual novel.
Well, they also have it apparently separately on iOS. So, as I have an iPhone, I can pick up this on my iPhone. It has 10 different stories that are written from viewpoints of the characters from the original game. So they're just serious stories that are just written from different viewpoints of different characters, not necessarily Okabe. And they are written by a team of new writers who were supervised by the original scenario writer. Yeah. So it's not all by the same person. But it is well regarded, and it is also far more serious. It's not like these little flippant, here's a dating sim, haha, you know.
Yeah, kind of yeah.
So
they did a big advertising push on Steins Gate, My Darling's Embrace, and I considered checking it out just because I like these characters and I like this world.
No, waste your time.
Yeah, I just like you know, I'm not necessarily in the market for like a dating sim kind of thing. It's just not a it's not a kind of game that, you know, I'm very interested in. But like something that I liked about Steins Gate Zero and Steins Gate is that it does kind of avoid some of that, you know, like to, you know, answering the right question to make somebody like you, like the relationships are explored, you know, but between all of them fully, and like the individual like ending specifically in Steins Gate 1 kind of end up taking the place of that to us, you know, to a certain degree, but like, you know, the interpersonal stuff is there and it matters, but it is not emphasized. And so like, mm-hmm. I have no idea if like a straight up dating game version that, you know, a straight up dating game that takes place in this world is going to have the, like the stakes necessary for me to feel invested.
No. Yeah. And that's the thing, as I was going to say, there are bigger things that are more important than romance in the original Steins Gate and Steins Gate Zero.
Right,
and the
right.
thing about, My Darling's Embrace in that game, the characters still have the ability to change the past using D-mails, but for some unexplained reason in this world line, CERN does not have the rounders hunting them.
Okay.
And Okabe's main problem is paying the bills. And so he ends up taking a part-time job. And that
Weird.
Is where you, that's your story. Like with no stakes, and it's just, you got the time. So everybody who's horny teenagers just got to date each other. I don't know.
Cool.
So like, yeah, it's not worth your time.
Yeah. So. Okay, cool. That's, I can take it off of my wish list then.
Yeah, so. You can. I already bit the bullet on that, and I went ahead and played some of it just to see before we did this episode. I was like, I just got to see if this is, nope.
No. Yeah, having looked into it, I just here's a quick question. You know, of the dateable characters, so can you date Rukako, and or can you date Moeka?
I have no idea, because I didn't even get as far as the actual like dating stuff. I was just like, this is boring me to tears, and I like these characters. It's
right.
just like their day to day life doing nothing mm-hmm. important is not that exciting to me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's really just not. And like, I'm just like, I got not enough interest in.
Gotcha.
I like these characters and I like mm-hmm. this world. I do not like what this is doing.
It's right.
too much of nothing. Too much nothing.
Yeah.
In my opinion. So I don't know. It would be my impression that you would be able to date them, but I do not know for a fact. I would have to Google that to tell you.
Those would be like the interesting routes to me if they decided to go those directions. But
well, the one that I definitely want to play and I will be pursuing after we are done today is I will be bookmarking and checking into Linear Bounded Phenogram, the one that has those 10 stories by different viewpoints that are well regarded. That is the one that is highest regarded out of the spinoff games that have come off of this.
Yeah, that kind of sounds like, oh gosh, the jump from Corpse Party to Corpse Party Book of Shadows, actually. Like the little sides, the side stories told during the main thing. Yeah,
it does. And like, you know, I'm sure it'll kind of feel like that too, where like after I played Corpse Party and then I got to Book of Shadows, I'm like, you know, I'm enjoying these for the most part, but these are really just like random stories. So don't expect like a connected story. And don't, it's just like extra crap. This is really the omake. This is the fan disc or whatever.
Right.
You know, this mm-hmm. is just the extra stuff just because you like the characters. So, mm-hmm. you know,
I just went and did a search on the Mac App Store to see, you know, 'cause sometimes you can see the iOS stuff on there. Just to search for Steins Gate. There's a little app you can get for $2 that will put the Nixie tube clock from the divergence meter on your desktop, which seems kind of cool. A fun little,
That's There you go.
I'll read some
now.
Reviews.
What happens? Do you start having like a freak out whenever it starts changing?
No. You can set it up to be that it's actually like a date display or something like that. Oh, I don't. Maybe you can have it set to display the thing. I don't know. I really, ever since playing this, I've wanted to get like a Nixie Tube kit and make a clock, because those are sweet.
Well, there you go. You are satisfied now.
Yeah.
Perhaps satisfied by $2 app on the back door.
I will not be. So, oh well.
You got some higher expectations than that.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Yeah. So overall, my general feeling about Steins Gate as a property, I guess, it has a lot more horror elements than I expected going into it. I really was just like, huh. Well, I didn't sign up. I don't know what I was signing up for, but I didn't think it was that. But that's cool, because I happen to like horror, so we're good, you know?
Yeah. I just, man, like, just the Okabe's whole journey, you know, you hate seeing that you like seeing somebody, like how he is at the start of Steins Gate Zero, just kind of broken by what he went through. But like, I'm very happy that they decided to look at how somebody would act if they had been through all of that.
Well, yeah. It's through those difficulties that the characters grow. Yeah. If you have none of those difficulties, you have my darling's embrace.
Right.
So you have to have those hard, difficult things happen in order to, you know, make the characters and you go, oh, damn, now what?
Yeah.
You know, and like, you are just as dramatically affected because these things are happening and you're experiencing them with the characters. So that's why it's so important. And especially as an adult who's been through some shit, like seeing Okabe going through some shit and growing up real fast and then having to deal with, you know, consequences and responsibilities and things that he's got to deal with in Steins Gate Zero really is just, it feels more real to me in a lot of ways, you know, for that. So that's why it's easier for me to get invested in Zero versus the original game. Although the original game is 1,000,000% necessary in order to go into Zero and understand a damn thing or have any appreciation for the subtleties.
Right.
So,
I'm really, I'm curious, you know, so this is part of like a broader, let's say like collection, like an anthology, called, Science Adventure. All of them are, you know, kind of co-developed by the Studio 5PB, Nitro Plus, Mages is somewhere in there as well. The only other one of these outside of Steins Gate and Steins Gate Zero that has come here to America that I've seen is Chaos Child, which is a follow-up to Chaos Head, which has not been localized officially here in America. I've got Chaos Child and I've played it and it is more explicitly horror based, like a psychological horror kind of thing. And what that uses instead of a phone trigger is delusion trigger, because your character is having like hallucinations and you try to decide which of those you kind of go for. I really want to fire that back up again and see kind of how that goes. But like, I'm worried that not having played Chaos Head, I will be lost. There are like other things here in the series that have not come out here. Like Robotics Notes is another one that I guess is being localized at this point, is going to be coming out soon. I just kind of want to see more of these and see other stuff that kind of like what did they decide had enough in common with Steins Gate to lump these together.
Well, and Steins Gate is apparently the second game in the series after Chaos Head. So I do know that, you know, there is one overarching committee of 300 that is the villain for all of the science adventure series. And the committee of 300 is the organization that is behind I think it's behind CERN, if I'm not mistaken, which is like the main. CERN is controlled by the Committee of 300, the central antagonist from the science adventure. I'm just reading it off my notes right now. Yeah, it totally is. And I wrote that as a note. So You know, it's controlled by it. So like, and that's probably going to be how they link it together and everything. This committee of 300 is just like behind all of these undercover sciency villainous organizations everywhere.
And that's so, that's part of what I want to see as well, because like the committee of 300 is an actual ass conspiracy theory. Like, you know, it's linked to the Rothschilds and stuff. You know, whenever anybody brings up the Rothschilds as part of a conspiracy, it's usually something anti-Semitic. But I like when these conspiracy theories are explored in media. See also Deus Ex, right?
Yeah. From what I've seen, just because I took a peek a little while back about the Science Adventure series, most of the rest of the games are kind of on the lower end of the review spectrum from Steins Gate. Like, Steins Gate is probably the most broadly recognized and well regarded. There are apparently some other entries in the series that are also pretty good, pretty well regarded, but I don't know because I haven't played any of those so far, although definitely after playing Zero, I do want to see more from this series and from these publishers. So so we might be doing that eventually, Cole.
Who knows? Who knows? Yeah. Whenever we cross over on these, you know, because like it, you know, I forget
whenever
how much
the
of
world
this
lines converge.
I forget how much we, you know, we talked about this in the and the Danganronpa bonus level that we did. Like, it's really hard to talk about any game that is like this on the level, and like we both like them and spend time playing them. So it's nice to be able to just like talk about it in detail and kind of make a pitch for it and offer our reactions. I'm interested to hear what you think about them, because like, I don't know, you don't get to talk to a lot of people about this. Not a lot of folks have you know, indulged or, you know, taken the time to, you know, to read them. So it's fun to be able to do this when it happens to be that we have both played the same thing.
The good news, I guess, for people who like this, because I know there have been several people who have asked me, when are you guys going to do another one of those things? Is, you know, the fact that Cole and I pretty often end up kind of converging on the same media, you know, like on the same, like liking some of the same styles of visual novels and things, with some notable exceptions. However, I think that honestly, I wholeheartedly believe that a lot of my intolerance for Virtue's Last Reward was based on the time in which I played it, more so than the game itself, because I liked 999 and I liked Zero Time Dilemma both just fine. So I think it was just the time in which I played it. I was not tolerant towards that type
That's fair.
Of media. But anyway, so
yeah.
So yeah, if you guys like this, definitely let us know, and we'll see what games might, you know, converge in this world line.
Yeah. but you know, do let us know what you think of these. I had fun making this here. Jolly, thank you for, you know, hopping on and talking.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a lot of fun. Yeah. I don't get to talk. Like, I get to say, I played this game and I really like it. You know, like, I'm basically vibrating in my chair and I, like, can't talk about it. So, and I'm like, I would love to tell you, but I can't. You know, like, so,
yeah.
You know, it's great to be able to talk a little bit more in depth. And hopefully, some people who are listening, who I'm sure there's going to be people listening who have not played the game, maybe you guys are going to be interested enough to give it a shot.
Yeah. So, you know, and we spoiled stuff. We talked about endings. You know what I would say, you know, if you've gotten to this point and you think like, oh, I've, you know, did I get everything I need? Like, it really is the journey. Like,
it is.
Yeah. So I, you know, and you're probably going to forget names and you're going to forget a lot of things that we talked about because you don't have a point of reference for it. So you'll probably be fine. I would still encourage you, you know, if you go ahead.
There are also so many details and little things that are so important to your experience of the story that we didn't brush on, and we didn't talk about every ending. We didn't talk about anything in super great detail. So, I mean, like, there is still so much more about the series that you can absorb through playing it. And I definitely encourage playing over watching the anime. Just because that road to get to that ending is really the important part of it, and those false starts, those endings, that you basically are only getting information about a character or about a scenario, but then you have to start over again. But now you are empowered with that knowledge. I mean, all of that is crucial to each successive unveiling of the next plot point.
I would also say that having consumed both, the anime does strip away, a lot from the story, and those endings that you get specifically in the first one, they do add an awful lot more, that, it would be a shame to lose out on that. So while the anime itself is very well done, the voice acting is great. The voice acting in the game is really good too. the animation is very well done. The game, I also would say is the proper way to go about it. You're going to get the most, I would say, by doing that.
Yes, definitely.
And Steins Gate Zero, I just realized this, they're doing an elite version of that coming up here soon as well. That'll be more readily available as well.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Well, I don't know. I mean, I could talk more about this, but I think that we've reached a natural conclusion point.
Yeah, I know. There's still so much more that you can say about this series as a whole, and each individual game, and lots of different details about the characters, the story, the setting, any of that. Yeah. But I think we are at a good stopping point, though.
Yeah, cool. Well, thank you, Jala.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody who listened. If if you're hearing this, if this is the first thing that you have heard, I find that very hard to believe, but we do a weekly regular kind of show about current games and things like that. My sense is you probably came here from that. So all the things that you can do otherwise. So we're just going to say goodbye. It's weird to end a show just like this without doing our little ritual. So goodbye.
Bye.